Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another Daily Trend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Sarah Gon. Let's get into our first news story of today, and this is from Parliament, where there have been shocking revelations about the state of the South African Post Office. So, of course, anyone who's followed the Post Office at all in the past couple of years will know that it has been in an enormous amount of trouble. Last year, it was placed in a business rescue in an attempt to prevent it from being liquidated, but that seems to have had little results so far. The bosses of the post office, including the acting CEO, have warned that the post office will run out of money by next month and will be forced into liquidation unless it gets 3.8 billion rand in a bailout or a guarantee from government. The chief financial officer was briefing Parliament's Oversight Committee on Communications and Digital Technology on the status of the South African post office's business rescue and said without a major capital injection, the post office's business rescue practitioners will be legally obligated to place the South African post office in liquidation as directed by South African company law. The post office will then basically be entirely shut down and sort of its remaining assets will be sold off in order to pay retrenchment packages and that sort of thing. Sarah, you know, what is there to be done here about the post office? It has been a kind of mess for a very long time now. And now it's demanding, what, another 4 billion rand. I presume government is going to end up paying this. But, you know, this is a continuous sort of festering wound in the South African financial system. What do you make of this story?
Well, I think it's indicative of what the problems that may stymie growth in this country. And that is the fact that the ANC doesn't take the tough decisions, takes too long to make poor decisions, doesn't bring in the private sector if that is a solution. And there have been a lot of comments recently by analysts in the media that we're not getting on fast enough with changes that need to be made. And I think this is the one problem that the ANC presents us, is that you need to make tough decisions, you need to make them quickly. And they've got to stop punting this idea of not entirely trusting the private sector. Because I know their private sector groups have put in proposals for taking over the post office. I don't know the details. They may or may not be viable. But if they are, you know, the bailout is probably inevitable, but that it's got to stop. And if they are, that decision has to be made to save jobs, to create jobs, to make it a service that's efficient and contributes to the creation of a decently strong economy. And we are so, the general comment is they're being far too slow to do things. And it seems to have hit Transnet as well. A lot of the so progressive moves that emanated since in the mid last year with the involvement of the private sector have been stymied because the ANC wants to be in control. And the bottom line is it can't do the job. It must get other people to do it. And the ideology and the sort of bleating about utopian aims of reaching the most equitable society, they're fluff. That's not realistic. It's detrimental. It's got to change.
So thankfully, I think that the advance of technology and also the private sector in many cases have actually replaced a lot of the functions of the post office, thank goodness, which means that if it is liquidated, many people, probably most people, will not really be terribly affected by it. But there are older South Africans and poorer South Africans specifically who I think will still be hit by the post office falling apart. So this is, you know, those are actually key constituencies for the ANC in particular. So they would be fools not to try and save this thing. And of course, you know, we just can't afford to keep this thing afloat if it's going to cost us 4 billion every couple of months.
And just to say, it seems like some of the private proposals have intended to innovate what post offices are used for, particularly in rural underserved areas. So it probably doesn't make sense to go business as usual. Well, clearly doesn't make sense.
Exactly. Okay, let's go into our next story. And this one is one of those stories which is kind of symptomatic of the problems across so much of the country. And this is a report from the investigative site GroundUp, which says that there is massive overcrowding in some Limpopo schools, in particular on the border with Zimbabwe in the town of Musina. There are as many as 90 students per class in some of the high schools there. In the town of Messina, there are three schools. One of them is a fee-paying school. That one doesn't appear to have as overcrowded, be as overcrowded as the others, understandably. The two no-fee schools are massively overcrowded with an average of 90 in, students in one class and 50 students in another class, which to me, Sara, seems completely unmanageable. I don't really know then what the teachers are supposed to do. Even if you had the best teachers in the world, you're going to really struggle to do anything other than just basically warehouse kids until you presumably put them into matric where they probably won't pass.
Mm. Well, basically, Limpopo obviously hasn't got to grips with it. The Limpopo Education Department says, you know, they haven't, the school hasn't reported that it needs help. And I suspect it's just that the reports probably surfaced some years ago and they've largely just ignored them. And the reality is that with a lot of schooling, you have to be more hands-on to the needs of the school as a department, because you're dealing with parents who don't know that they can apply to put their children in fee-earning schools and get exemption on fees, who don't know that you've got to keep banging on the doors of education because it doesn't pay attention the first, second, or third time around. It requires competence, dedication, and really doing something. And all I see is the perpetuation of kids not being schooled adequately, not being having access to better access to potential employment. It's just the cycle is going to go on and on. And I think the national government has to look at the practicalities of what some of the provincial departments are doing, because otherwise it's just another lost generation, and we can't afford it, and the children who are going to not be educated in classes of 90 can't afford it.
Exactly right. And of course, national government continues to spend, you know, its money on saving SOEs, like the post office or ESCOM or SAA, when at the same time it's cutting budget from the money needed to pay teachers. The Western Cape has been complaining about this recently, saying that it doesn't have the money to fund a new wage agreement with teachers, and so it's having to cut 2,900 teachers across the province there. So clearly, national government's priorities are completely misaligned on this one. And, you know, you just can't continue forward where you have schools with 90 students, because that's just going to, per class, that's just a waste of everyone's time and everyone's money.
Yeah.
All right. Very briefly, let's talk a little bit about our final story here, and this is about the former PRASA, that's the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa, Chief Engineer Daniel Mtumkulu, who has been sentenced to 15 years in prison for falsifying his qualifications and submitting a fake employment offer from a German company in order to bump up his salary. See, he appeared in the Joburg court, where he was found guilty a while ago of this fraud. And now he's been sentenced to 15 years in jail. He claimed he had a national diploma in mechanical engineering and a BTEC degree in engineering maintenance from the Vaal University of Technology, a degree in mechanical and maintenance engineering from the University of Wits, a master's degree in engineering, and a doctorate in engineering management, which he appears not to have had any of, and was somehow managed to get himself appointed chief engineer of PRASA, which perhaps explains a fair amount about why PRASA has been in so much trouble for a while. But, Sara, we were talking about this beforehand. Definitely a good thing that someone who is at the sort of higher levels of the civil service and is playing games with their qualifications and committing fraud is facing the law. And I think that this is a good thing. I mean, that's a pretty harsh sentence, 15 years. But you said that it's quite simply not enough.
Well, I think two problems highlighted from this event, which is can only help in the long run. The one is the cadre deployment is absolutely disastrous for the country at whatever level it occurs. There's obviously incompetence in the way the appointment was managed. I mean, someone should have had some level of incredulity that this man was so highly qualified. They needed to check every alleged document of education that he had, and I presume they either didn't do it or they couldn't do it or whatever the problem may be. The other is the poor man is probably just not high enough up the chain to receive protection. So he ended up in the courts, 15 years for fraud, appropriate. Apparently, I think he got 2 6-year sentences that will run concurrently. And I remember when this happened. It happened when Prasa was discovered to have really stuffed up the order of new locomotives. They didn't fit the rails, etc. It was around the same time. Lesson, cargo deployment's got to go. Competence merit has got to take precedence over everything. And hopefully in the long run, the guys up the chain will cease to be protected as well. We can only hope.
Definitely, definitely agree. It's also not the first time we've seen people all over the political and civil service spheres being caught faking degrees of various kinds. I know that Fort Hare had a scandal relatively recently where it was found that a lot of degrees had been issued incorrectly. And I suspect there's also quite a lot of degrees that are being issued to sort of senior people in the sort of political elite who are attending university maybe as a part-time thing, and then they get someone else to write their thesis paper or whatever, and, you know, they kind of manage to sneak through the system. And that's not, you know, always necessarily on the same level as just straight up lying about, you know, getting your degree. But I do think this sort of degree inflation is actually probably quite a problem at the upper levels of government.
Yeah, I think essentially skepticism must rule.
Definitely. Okay, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for listening. We hope that you found the show interesting. That's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.